for your own planet. That was bigger than I was thinking. All right. All right, in the Bible, God came to somebody named Solomon, and he asked him, he said, I'll give you whatever you want. One thing, what would it be? And you know what he asked for? And did not ask for a beanbag. Maybe, I don't know, a bag of beans. They probably had bags of beans back then. All right, but he asked for wisdom. He asked for wisdom, right? What is that? Is that if I had a stack of books, you know, and I could pull from this stack of books, these are all the same book, but I could pull from a stack of books, oh no, there's a hymnal and Bibles, you know, and I could spout facts to you, and I knew all this scientific information, and I wore my smart glasses this morning, would that be wisdom? No, wisdom is having that. That's a part of it. But wisdom is being able to make right decisions, right choices. And if I had a bag of candy and I had a bag of carrots or a tasty apple or banana, right? What now, is it sinful to eat the candy? No, it's not. It's not sinful to eat candy. Sometimes it probably should be. Okay? But it's not sinful to eat the candy, but what's the wise choice in the long run? The vegetables or the fruit. Right? And that's you've grown up enough to have that amount of wisdom. Right? To make a right choice. The candy's good, but it's not sinful to eat it. Every once in a while, okay. But I can't eat candy for every meal, right? We know. But the right decision would probably be to have that. And that's wisdom. And that's what God is going for. And God was really happy with Solomon for making that choice, to ask for wisdom. And this morning we're going to be defining more about what wisdom is and looking at it as I get up here. But I'm going to dismiss you guys because I'll probably be too boring for you. Okay, and we're going to go to, you guys are going to head that way to Junior Church as my family clears out the pew to go and teach you that way. Okay. Okay. Sammy always has to have the last word. If you would turn with me in your Bibles to Proverbs chapter 8, we're going to be in verses 10 through 16 and another passage in there, 22 through 31. So Proverbs chapter 8. We've been talking the past couple weeks about the Beatitudes. I say we, Fred, has been talking about the Beatitudes. And the Beatitudes is the introduction to the Sermon on the Mount. And he is spending several weeks talking about just the introduction, so that tells you the power that's in the Sermon on the Mount. The Sermon on the Mount is in Matthew, and it's three chapters, and it is chock full of what I call kingdom wisdom, the wisdom of the kingdom of God. And so I'm not going to be preaching about the Beatitudes this morning. I'll leave that for Fred. He knows where he wants to go with that. But what I want to talk about this morning is wisdom, this idea of wisdom. As we look, the best place to go for it is Proverbs, right? That's where we have all these nuggets of wisdom, all these great gems and pearls of wisdom to look at. And the entire book is wisdom, and it's in a section of the Bible that we call wisdom literature, right? Wisdom literature. So where else should we go? And when we look at Proverbs, all of Proverbs is poetry. And for some of us who think poetry has to rhyme, all right, we may not immediately recognize it when we read it, but thankfully most of our translations have put it into a verse that makes it easy to recognize, oh, this is poetry, maybe I should read it like that. And it's not narrative and it's not history, so I can read it like poetry. And it has a flow to it. It's hard to always recognize the flow. You know, it's kind of like translating some songs into... Have you ever done that with Google Translate? You translate an English song into another language and then back into English and it's totally messed up. It's hard. It's hard to get that rhythm, but it is here in Proverbs. Proverbs was written as a manual to be taught and gone through, mostly in a boys' school, okay? And so that's why you'll see some of the imagery here. But also, it was meant to be gone through as a community under wise parents and later wise mentors, to be gone through together. And so it's great that we're all here this morning, that we can go through it together the way it's kind of meant to be. Proverbs 8, starting at verse 10, says, "Choose my instruction rather than silver." This is wisdom speaking. And "knowledge rather than pure gold. For wisdom is far more valuable than rubies. Nothing you desire can compare with it. I, wisdom, live together with good judgment. I know where to discover knowledge and discernment. All who fear the Lord will hate evil. Therefore, I hate pride and arrogance, corruption and perverse speech. Common sense and success belong to me. Insight and strength are mine. Because of me, kings reign and rulers make just decrees. Rulers lead with my help and nobles make righteous judgments." On to verse 22. "The Lord formed me from the beginning, before he created anything else. I was appointed in ages past, at the very first, before the earth began. I was born before the oceans were created, before springs bubbled forth their waters, before mountains were formed, before the hills I was born. Before he had made the earth and fields and the first handfuls of soil. I was there when he established the heavens and he drew the horizon on the oceans. I was there when he set the clouds above, when he established springs deep in the earth. I was there when he set the limits of the sea so that they would not spread beyond their boundaries. And when he marked off the earth's foundations, I was the architect at his side. I was his constant delight, rejoicing always in his presence. And how happy I was with the world he created, how I rejoiced with the human family." Now, moral standards, as important and as crucial as they are, they actually don't address most of the situations that you face. All right. Whatever you think the rules are, the vast majority of situations you face aren't covered by those rules. If you're going to make it through life without making an absolute mess of it, you're going to need something more than just the rules. And we hardly really talk about it today. He was talking about how we hardly talk about hell. We really don't talk about wisdom, right? The secular culture talks about science and facts. The moral communities and religious establishments talk a lot about morality, but actually what we need is not the same as knowledge or goodness. We need to find and grow in wisdom. And there's no better place to go to learn about wisdom than the Proverbs, all right? And here in this passage this morning, we see that the importance of wisdom, we see the definition of wisdom, and the problem of wisdom, and then a clue to the solution. All right. The importance of wisdom. First three verses tell us the importance of wisdom. Look at the progression that it says. Wisdom is speaking here. "I am more important than silver, than gold, than jewels, or anything you may desire." Wisdom is infinitely more important than all the wealth, all the fame, and all the power in the world. It is far more important to have the ability to grow and handle and flourish in life circumstances, whatever they are, than it is to have anything else. is only a tiny minority ever get their life circumstances even close to the way they want them. Right? No one at all even keeps them there. Right? There are lots of people who have talent, they have charisma, they have credentials, they have beauty, they have and they've gone nowhere. And then there's others that don't have any of that talent, and they have become something. What was the difference? Wisdom. Wisdom. Why is it so important to get wisdom? The reason you have to think about it, you have to set your mind on it, is because wisdom is not the same thing as moral goodness. It's not identical to it. It is related to it, but it's not identical. All right. Obviously, to be unethical is dumb. All right. Most of our schools teach that. In the long run, being unethical is, but that's the bare minimum. All right. It's not less than being ethical, but it's far more than being ethical. All right. Think about it. If you want to help a poor family out of poverty, no, that's noble. That's right. And you can do it completely ethically and still ruin their lives. Because you're not conversant with the complexities of how poverty actually works. Right? It's not enough to be people of vision. It's not enough to be principled. It's not enough to be the people of high principle. You have to be people of wisdom, or you're going to ruin your life and the lives of those around you. Another reason that wisdom is important is the frequency that it is needed. The frequency that it is needed. Some decisions only require knowledge. Some decisions only require knowledge. If you had all the knowledge that you needed, you could choose the right car. I never do. You could maybe choose the right medicine to take. There's other decisions that are only a matter of your principles and your commitments. The vast majority of decisions, though, that we're going to face, the rules and the facts aren't going to help you. Things like, who do you marry? Do you even get married? Who should you date? Should you break up? What career should you go into? What school should I try to get into? Should I stay here or go to another job? Right? Should I move here or should I move there? Should I confront that person or should I hold back? Should I take the risk or should I play it safe? And sometimes the wrong decision in any of these can be disastrous, yet the rules don't cover them. The rules don't cover them. You can't open your Bible and it give you the name of your spouse. Be easier, but it's not there. All right. I totally lost where I was. All right, whatever you think of the moral rules, they don't cover. Knowledge isn't enough. But we live in a culture that believes in science and scientific expertise, that if we just find the right scientific expert, it'll give us all the answers, right? That was the whole backbone of the modern era. But it doesn't give you the answers to any of these, and it doesn't give you the answers to most of the daily needs that we have. All right, moral people say that morality is important, and of course it is, all right? It is crucial, but it doesn't help us in all of our areas. All right, you see why wisdom is important? Everything you can imagine doesn't even come close to comparing with wisdom. But what is it? What is wisdom? I've already hinted at it in several areas. But verses 12 through 16, there's a lot of synonyms. There's a lot of imagery here. And as you read through the rest of Proverbs, that imagery keeps coming up. It's things like good judgment or prudence, discover knowledge or insight, and discernment. Discover knowledge or insight means knowing how things really work, how things really happen in life. Good judgment or prudence means to notice like little distinctions, knowing how things really are, right? If you and Sherlock Holmes walk into a room, all right, you'll look around and you'll see a mess. But what does he see? He sees the details, right? He sees the clues, and he'll soon know what really happened. What really happened, how things really are. Wisdom is to know how things really work in the world and know how things really are. Verse 15 and 16 says, "Because of me, kings reign and rulers make just decrees. Rulers lead with my help, we hope, and nobles make righteous judgments." So wisdom is also knowing what to do about it, knowing what to do with the information that you have. Gerard Van Rad is an Old Testament scholar and author, and don't go thinking I've studied all his works, okay? I just pulled out his definition of wisdom, okay? But he defines wisdom according to Proverbs as this: becoming competent with regard to the realities of life. So knowing how things really happen, know how things really are, and knowing what to do about it. He also says the wise have knowledge, of course. The wise have moral character, of course. But they also have a character of mind and heart that they always do the right things, even when the rules do not apply. That is wisdom. And maybe you start thinking, hold on. You know, I've been working really hard at being good, and that is hard enough. And now you want me to think about something else as well? All right? We'll get there, okay? I get it. The Bible talks and illustrates again and again the importance of wisdom. All throughout it, we have examples of people who either follow God's wisdom, who don't follow God's wisdom, or who try to mix the two. I'll take a little bit of God's wisdom, and then I'm going to do a little bit of my own. Right? You could look at all the stories in the Bible and break them up into those categories and see the examples, and it's God constantly trying to say, hey, you need my wisdom. You need to think about wisdom. You need wisdom. And I don't want to jump in. Okay. There's good stuff. All right. If you reject wisdom, yes, you can keep disaster at bay for a while. You can. And some people look like they've got it together, right? But it'll only be a while, and it's not going to be forever. It won't be forever. All right. Wisdom is important. We've defined wisdom. Well, let's look at the problem. All right, and you go, what problem? Why is there a problem with wisdom? Yes, hold on. Verse 22 and following. All right, and this is a poem, and it's great, and the imagery here is great. Wisdom speaks and says, I was with the Lord when the Lord made absolutely everything that was made. Before he made the mountains, I was with him. Before he made the seas, I was with him. Before he made humanity, I was with him. Not just the physical, but the spiritual too, I was there. God made everything with wisdom. Something that many scholars agree on is that this creation account is unique. It stands out from every other cultural creation story. Eastern societies, the material world, the physical world is basically an illusion, right? Or at least it's not reality, right? You're trying to figure that out so you can move on from this physical world. All right. In Western societies, all the creation's account, all of them, they see it as coming about through a power struggle. Whether it's the Old Norse, the Germanic, the Sumerian, the Babylonian, the Egyptian, the Greek, or the Romans, it doesn't matter. They're all a power struggle. You have these accounts of some kind of battle between the gods, between the gods and the giants. One god kills another god, and they create land from his body. It's this power struggle in all these creation accounts. It's always a power struggle. Only here do we have an account of the world not being based on random accident or being based on a power struggle, but on wisdom. Here you have God not in a power struggle, but in delight, the delight of an artist, right? Where it says here, I rejoiced in his presence. The word means to play, to move cheerfully, like dancing excitedly, frolic. In overwhelming joy, God designed the world to be a place of beauty and power and order and joy and peace. This is why the wise of Israel said this is the way that wisdom works. If God created the world through wisdom, then there is a fabric or a pattern. I can't think of a better way to describe it. There's this fabric or pattern to all of reality. It's not just random. If wisdom made the world, then wisdom can perceive, to a degree, the pattern and live within accordance to it. And therefore, to live wisely. To live wisely is to recognize the pattern and live according to it. There is a pattern to the physical reality. We think, you know, an object that obeys the fabric of reality of aerodynamics will fly, right? If it disobeys or it tries to ignore the pattern of aerodynamics, it will crash. The ancient sages would look at that and they say, if there's a pattern to the physical, then there's a pattern to the relational. And that if that pattern is not followed, then your relationships will crash. Just the way a plane has to obey the pattern of aerodynamics, we have to obey the patterns of relationships. That means there's a pattern to God's spiritual reality. And if we operate our heart, our conscience, our emotions, and our hopes, our meaning, in a way that is not in accord with the fabric or the pattern of the spiritual life, our spiritual life will crash. So foolishness in Proverbs, when it talks about the fool in Proverbs, it's talking about going against the weave or the structure, the pattern that God put into creation. Going against it always leads to breakdown. Two things you must know about the pattern, and two things that you have to hold equally in order to be wise. All right, and this is why we have such a problem today. Honestly, this is in our society. All right, the first thing you have to acknowledge is that there is a pattern. Okay, that God has made the world, and therefore there is a pattern. All right, we don't have to get into the details how it happened. Okay, but we do know that God created, and therefore there is a pattern. There are principles by which life usually works. Then on the other hand, you have to see that you can't know it all. There is that the pattern is largely hidden from you. All right, here's what that means. All right. Proverbs, chapters 1 through 9 in the book is kind of like an introduction. All right, took 9 chapters to introduce wisdom. All right, it was making wisdom desirable. All right, chapter 10 is where we start to get the proverbs that each verse has. Each verse is a different proverb. And there's hundreds and hundreds. So chapters 10 through 15, you see the principles by which life normally works. Life normally works this way. Like if you work hard, you will prosper. If you're lazy, you will be poor. Right? If you live life according to the moral absolutes, your life will go well. If you live wicked, your life won't go well. If you raise a child according to this pattern, she will love you and be a responsible adult. And if you have a conservative mindset, you read chapters 10 through 15 and you say, yes, that's right. Right? Work hard and you'll be okay. If you're lazy, you're poor. Right? And generally, I've read Proverbs without paying attention to its organization. All right. A lot of times, it's great to pick out pithy statements that are gems and great. And I was raised like that. When I wanted to sleep in on a Saturday morning instead of getting straight to that lawn work, I heard Proverbs spoken to me about hard work and laziness. Spare the rod, spoil the child. I felt that a few times. Right? And it's hard, okay? But if you read it the way it's written, you get to chapter 16, and you start seeing some exceptions to the way life usually works. Some of the Proverbs say that some people who live according to God's principles have a lousy life. And then it says some people who work hard stay poor because of oppression. And then it says that some children, even though they were raised right and had great parents, when they grow up, they go off the rails. And if you have a liberal mindset, you read these chapters and you say, yeah, that's right, life is messy. And I've always said that you cannot be predicting anything. But what is wisdom? If you don't want to admit there's a pattern, if you want to make up all the rules, if you say, I want to determine what is right or wrong for me, you're a fool. You're a relativistic fool. But if you think, you know what, I can see the whole pattern, that you can know it all, then you're a fool. You're a moralistic fool. So you can be a conservative fool or a liberal fool, a moralistic fool or a relativistic fool. We're all one or the other. We're all fools. We're one or the other because of ideology or temperament. You know, a perfect example is Job's friends. When Job had all those disasters come, and he's sitting down and he's looking for comfort, and his friends show up. You know, they look at him and they say, you know what? Your life is not going so well. You must be a sinner. It's your fault. And they are harsh, and they are miserable comforters, right? They are rigid. They're moralistic. They have a hold. They've grasped a hold of only one side of the pattern. They know that there's a pattern, yes, but they think they can see it all, and they don't think that there's any exceptions. Now, I'm not saying that there's exceptions to moral absolutes. That's not what I'm saying here. Murder is wrong, right? Adultery, wrong, always. But the principle, if you are faithful and honest, life will go well for you, doesn't always hold up. There are exceptions to that. And if you're the kind of person who says, you know, if I live a good life, my life will go well, you're a conservative fool. But if you're the kind of person who says, I can decide my own reality, I can decide what is right and wrong, I don't believe there's some divine order that I have to submit to, then you're a liberal fool. And we're all fools somewhere. Because we live in a society right now where we are split on this. And we keep pushing each other into more and more foolishness. And that is a problem. That is a problem. The solution. What is the solution? There's a clue right here in the passage. And it's the most basic point from this poem. It's a poem about wisdom. And what is the most basic point in this poem? Wisdom is personified. Wisdom is an I, a me, a my. It's an abstract quality that has been turned into a person. And you might think that, you know, that's just poetry, right? And poetry does weird things. Okay, this is just imagery that they use. And yeah, a little bit, okay? You know, this was a manual that was used to teach boys. So yes, wisdom is referred to as a woman, all right? A woman who calls to them. But wisdom, it's not about mastering a bunch of rules. It's a love affair. There's a love affair with wisdom that you need. You need to long for it. So the personification of wisdom, it's gripping. It's gripping. But is that all it is? What if it's not just poetry? What if this wisdom of God really was a person who you could know and you could love? If you got into a relationship with this person, it would actually make you wise. Then those of us who have never had wise parents, who have never had wise mentors, never had wise guides, never had the counselors that we should have, this would be the ultimate guide, the ultimate mentor, the wonderful counselor. What if wisdom was a person? If you're familiar with Catholic or Orthodox tradition, you might know or heard of the Book of Sirach. All right, it's in the Apocrypha for the Catholics. It's the last part of their Old Testament. They have some books that we don't include in our canon. Okay. And it's the Apocrypha, I don't feel like, adds or takes away. Okay. But it's the Book of Sirach is good wisdom literature. It's interesting. I don't think it's any more insightful than anything that we have. In fact, it just repeats a lot of the same things that we have. But in this book, the Book of Sirach, it's interesting because quotes from it show up in the New Testament. Okay? And there's this one passage that says this: "Turn unto me, you who are untaught. Why do you say you are lacking in these things, and why are your souls so thirsty? I say to you, find wisdom. Put it on your necks. Put your necks under it. Put your necks under its yoke and bear its burden. If you are intent, you can find wisdom. See with your eyes that I labored for it, and I have found for my soul much rest." And this is a typical invitation of wisdom that you would find in wisdom literature. But can you imagine what the listeners, several centuries later, thought? They couldn't believe their ears when one teacher got up and said these words. He says this: "Come unto me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly of heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." You hear the similarities? But whereas Sirach is talking about putting your head in the yoke of training and working hard to get the discipline, and then you get rest for your souls, Jesus says, "Come to me. Come to me. Take my yoke upon you. Learn of me, and I will give you rest." Jesus is saying, "I am wisdom. I am the wisdom of God. A relationship with me will make you wise. Wisdom is ultimately not a list of rules to master. It's not a body of principles to memorize. It is knowing Him, living for Him, learning from Him. It is the only thing that learning from and living for that won't exhaust you. Being good is hard. It's hard work. But living and learning from Christ is easier work. Yes, it's imagery. It's poetry. But it's not just poetry. It's pointing to a reality. Wisdom is a person. And you can take the time to get to know a person. In the beginning of the Gospel of John, it says, what? In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. That Word in the Greek is logos, and that also stood for wisdom. Jesus is God's wisdom, personified for us to know. And as I'm not gonna have a mic if I step down. We get ready to sing. The band's gonna come up here. And if you have not had an opportunity to get to know wisdom in the person of Jesus Christ, we want to give you that opportunity. We offer this invitation every week, and we'd love for you to have it. If you need prayer, if you need prayers for wisdom and things going on in your life, we would love to have the opportunity to pray with you and to help you get to know this Jesus as well as we have, if not better than we have. As we all stand up, we'll sing.